Welcome to Hello Tangent, the podcast where we talk about movies, TV, video games, comics, and desperately try to stay on topic. I am your host, Clark, a.k.a. the Reverend Michael Snakebite. I'm by myself today. Well, if you don't count, Zelda and Murr are hanging out in here with me. If you hear Zelda barking, she's staring out the window right now. We got a pretty good storm going, so if you hear any thunder or just any weird rain sounds, that's what's going on outside. It's coming down pretty good, honestly. I probably need it to cool it off a little. It's been pretty much triple digits here where I live for the last week, honestly. But anyway, let's not talk about that. Let's get into part two of my top 10 favorite movies by the decade. And today we're talking about the 1990s, my prime, the prime of my childhood going into adulthood. This is the decade where I was going into elementary school at the beginning, and I was going into high school as it ended, to give you a time frame of my ages here. I was six or so when it started. No, maybe. Yeah. When the decade started, I was six. And when it ended, I was 15. There we go. I can do math. You would think it'd be easy because it's like, 10 years. But no, you know, because you aren't quite that age when, unless you're born on January 1st, then yeah, I'm not going to get into that. Look at this. I get on tangents and I don't even have a co-host. How is this possible? What's wrong with you, Clark? Shut the fuck up. But yeah, this was really, really hard. This was way harder for me than the 80s movies. And obviously, you don't have to have been alive in the decade or remember a lot of the decade to appreciate the movies from the decade, but there is a certain amount of nostalgia that goes into it, and I can't avoid it in the 90s, because whereas I was very young in the 80s and don't remember or may have not seen some of those movies until later, with the 90s, I saw most of these movies in theater or when they came out, or shortly thereafter on VHS or something along those lines. And all these movies were very personal to me, and I got quite a list of honorable mentions that I hated to leave off. I really hated to leave off. I'm going to stick with my list, though. I'm content with it. I'm happy with it. I think it's a solid list. I think it's got a few Dark Horse candidates, and I think it's got some pretty common, those are some of the greatest movies ever made kind of things on there. Or at least greatest 90s movies. But I'm not going to waste too much time. We'll keep this one shorter than we did the 80s. I say that now, but I haven't even got into it yet. It's just very free-flowing. There's no script here, so it could go an hour. It could go 30 minutes. We'll see what happens. But I don't want to waste too much of your time. So let's go ahead and get into this list, and I will tell you my top 10 favorite movies from the 90s and why they made it. Coming in at number 10 is Interview with the Vampire. So let's go ahead and get the goth stuff out right out the gate. Like, don't turn off the countdown yet if you hate this movie. And it is, I would say it's probably a controversial movie. There's probably a lot of people that just aren't into this stuff and really hate it. This was the Twilight before there was Twilight. This was the Vampire Diaries before there was Vampire Diaries. Obviously, the Anne Rice Chronicle, or the Vampire Chronicles by Anne Rice, are a huge, huge book series, and a lot of people absolutely love them. I personally have not read all of Anne Rice's novels. I've read a couple of them just out of curiosity to see how they match up to the movies, and that would give it away, because obviously Queen of the Damned is also a Anne Rice inspired movie. But and then I've read one other Anne Rice novel, but not going to get in too much to the writer and what I think about her. She's been very back and forth about what she thinks about this movie and its interpretation. She did not want Tom Cruise to be Lestat. I know that much for a fact. And then she's kind of gone back on it and been like, oh, he was such a great Lestat. And then she's gone back and forth on a lot of like whether or not she thinks the movie is good or bad. So I'm not going to get into like too much of that point of view and how it reflects on the book, but I'm just going to take the movie for how it is. And I will flat out say, I love the movie. Obviously because it made number 10 on my top 10 favorite 90s movies list. And there were hundreds of 90s movies. getting back into the basics, though, it stars Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, Kirsten Dunst, and Antonio Banderas. That's probably your main four. There are other, I think Tandy Newton is actually in this movie, too. I can't remember. She's like a character, a vet. Oh, yeah. Okay, I remember where she's at. I knew she was in it somewhere. Okay, sorry, jogging my own memory here. Like I said, I don't do this by script. I go completely based on my own memory. By the way, I got totally called out on my 80s countdown for not remembering who Mr. Miyagi was immediately. Yeah, that was a dumb moment on my part. Sorry, guys. Thanks for listening. Getting back to the movie, Interview with the Vampire. Yeah, it's, I can't convince anybody to like this movie. You're either going to like it or you're not. But it follows the vampire named Lestat, played by Tom Cruise, who basically is lonely and wants a protege. And he turns a young farmer from New Orleans whose wife has died and he has nothing to live for, basically. He's a plantation owner. I shouldn't say farmer. He's a plantation owner. And Lestat turns this guy, Louis, into a vampire, and that's played by Brad Pitt. And he immediately is the brooding vampire who hates himself for being what he is. And it's like one of those desperation things where you got to ask yourself, if you're dying and you're offered the gift of life, do you take it kind of thing? Like, hey, I'll give you eternity. You know, are you more scared of death than you are becoming a monster kind of thing? And that's the whole morality play that Louis goes through in his head. And, you know, Lestat even says that the famous quote in the movie that starts, I don't want to say it starts the movie, but it's a quote early in the movie, and it's the quote that kind of ends the movie, and it's the, I'm going to give you the choice I never had. So Lestat obviously was forced to become a vampire, and he goes around now creating vampires kind of almost for fun and just to have little toys to play with, projects. Christian Slater, by the way, is in it too, and that's, I don't want to give away anything, but Christian Slater is the guy who is interviewing the vampire. So the movie is actually taking place in modern day. So it takes place in like 1995 or 1994, I should say, because that's when the movie came out. And it's in the 90s. And Christian Slater is this guy. I don't know how he gets the tip that this guy's a vampire. I think he's following him, like he has his suspicions or something. Anyway, Louis gives him the opportunity to interview him and ask him whatever he wants. So he's getting to interview a vampire, and that's hence the name of the movie. And Louis's kind of going back all the way to the beginning and saying how he became a vampire and his whole tragic life, and basically recounting the last 250 or whatever, how many years it is, because it goes back to like the 1700s, but basically the last 200 plus years of his life. And that's the premise of the movie, and you basically follow him telling the story, and it's following Louis's life and his ups and downs with Lestat, and then they meet, they take in another vampire into their fold named Claudia, who's played by a very young Kirsten Dunst, who is awesome in the role. I mean, incredible child actor for the time. I think I've seen some things talking about like how she just blew the casting like directors away with her audition, and she is great in it. Like she almost has this way of playing like she's a kid. Obviously she was a kid in this movie, but she has a way of playing a very adult version of herself. Like she acts like a vampire who's been, you know, 100 years old and bored with life. So it's really great for a child actor to be able to come across like that, to be able to be like, oh yeah, I have, in real life, she's, you know, 12 years old or 11 years old, however old she was, but she is able to act as someone who has 100 plus years of life experience. And so she does a great job, I think, in that. Really not a whole lot else I can say about it. I just really like this movie. I wanted to put it on there. It still kind of is fun for me to watch anytime. I will say that there's one weird thing about the movie is it's a lot of slow talking, a lot of dialogue, a lot of brooding, and then really, really loud action. Your volume, you're going to be constantly going up and down on your volume on your TV because it goes from super quiet where you got to turn it up to hear what everyone's saying and brooding and talking about to like, oh my God, there's lots of music and lots of things going on and lots of sound effects and lots of noise, and you got to turn it down. That's my one complaint with the movie. and I couldn't, I don't think I saw, I didn't see this in theaters, but I do still have it on DVD. And that's probably my only complaint with it I have to this day. Still great movie. Totally deserves to be on this countdown because it's one of those movies where if it's on, I'm going to watch it. It's one of those movies, like I said, I have on DVD and I can just put in when I need to have something on and I'm doing stuff around the house or even trying to take a nap or something even. So yeah, it's going to go there at number 10. Coming in at number 9 is Scream. Scream came out in 1996. It is a Wes Craven horror movie. It stars, no spoiler, you know what? This is 90s movies. I'm not going to say no spoilers. If I spoil something, it's on you. You should watch these movies. You should have already watched these movies. Scream, though, stars Drew Barrymore, quotes, in quotes, I'll say. Skeet Ulrich, and who else? Nev Campbell, whose name I think I forgot when I was doing I started to record this countdown earlier, and then some things came up, and I had to quit. And I think I totally forgot Nev Campbell's name. But Nev Campbell has Rose McGowan, has Matthew Lillard, it has, what is that little dickhead's name? The guy that played in Malibu's Most Wanted. It's killing me. People are probably yelling at me right now just because, I forgot Mr. Miyagi's name. That's a big deal. But this guy, don't yell at me for. I can't remember his name. Jamie Kennedy. Damn it. Glad. See, all it took was just thinking about Malibu's Most Wanted for a second. But yeah, it also has Courtney Cox and was it David Arquette? Yeah, David Arquette. This is actually the movie they met on and ended up getting married afterward. So that's kind of a fun little pop culture nugget there. Anyway, Scream is a horror movie, and it didn't invent the teen slasher movie, obviously, but it really reinvented the teen slasher movie and kind of it revamped it for everything after. I think Scream is a very big point in horror movie history, that before Scream, you had more sequels to movies that were already established because they couldn't come up with anything really new. And then after Scream, you have a lot of like slasher movies that come up after it, or reboots of really little known B movies from like the 70s and 80s, that it kind of reinvigorated that entire genre of the whole slasher horror movie. And it's crazy to think this is 1996. It's not, that far, I guess, from the 2000s. And then you end up having like Saw and stuff come out not too long after that, the whole like torture porn era of horror. But yeah, I love Scream. It's one of my favorite horror movies. Like, I'm a huge horror junkie, but I've gotten to the point, I think I said this about when I was talking about the 80s movies, but I've gotten to the point with horror movies where I appreciate them almost as how they're directed, almost like as a formula, like a formulaic way, like an art form. I appreciate everything that goes into making a horror movie more than I appreciate if a horror movie is, quote unquote, good storytelling. It's sometimes just, it can be really bad, but it's good if it's shot really well. That's the only way I can really describe it. And I think that's how a lot of, almost like the people that are really into wrestling, all kayfabe is gone. Like, everybody knows that wrestling's fake, and everybody knows how they've gotten more interested into the business side of it and how they sell matches and the pacing and things like that, more than they care about like what it was in the early 90s and late 80s, where it was all about the characters and the, big deal. Like, now it's about the people. They're in shape, the physique, the health and wellness, the job, the professionalism of it. That's what wrestling and wrestling fans have now really gotten into, more than like believing the narrative. And, that's the best way I can describe how a lot of like true horror fans are. They really appreciate the movies for almost their beauty and the way they're constructed, and not necessarily because it's believable. And Scream, like I said, it's just so good. Did so many things well, and it's almost a whodunit also, because it really keeps you guessing, and then it has a twist ending with the who the killers are. So it's not obviously, like I said, I don't care if I'm spoiling this for you. Too late. This is a 24-year-old movie. But there are two killers, and that was a huge thing for the time, because everyone, like in a whodunit slasher movie, it's always trying to figure out who the killer is. And this is the first movie that was like, hey, what if there's two killers? and they're working together, and it was just brilliant. And then the motives are kind of fun, because like one of the guy's motives is just he was bored and he hates, and he's a kind of a sociopath. And then the other guy's motives are actually like very centric, hated on the main character who he is currently dating in the movie. So it's, I mean, he got really close to the enemy. Like it's a well thought out revenge plan. But anyway, it's a good movie. It set up a bunch of sequels. The sequels, I liked Scream 2. Once it gets to 3, I'm like, I can do without. But, Liev Schreiber, by the way, plays the guy who's in jail for the murder. I always thought that was funny. He appears more in the sequels, but it's kind of funny that he appears on a TV screen, I believe, in the first one, and that's all Liev Schreiber's in there for. So they must have planned on doing a sequel. They must have thought this is going to be something. I could be wrong about that, though. Call me out on it if I'm wrong. Let's move on, though. Coming in at number 8 is The Hunt for Red October. The Hunt for October came out in 1990. It is a Tom Clancy-based movie, and it is my favorite property of anything Tom Clancy. You can take Counter-Strike, you can take Splinter Cell, you can take any of the other Jack Ryan movies, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, you can take Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger. By the way, love both those movies. Love Clear and Present Danger, love Patriot Games. But this is my favorite Jack Ryan movie, hands down. It stars Alec Baldwin, Sean Connery, Sam Neill is in it, pre-Jurassic Park Sam Neill, by the way. I think a lot of people got introduced to Sam Neill really when he was in Jurassic Park, or at least people my age, but I actually saw him first in Hunt for Red October. And it's got James Earl Jones in it also. Just thinking of people now that come up, but it's got Tim Curry in it too. I forgot Tim Curry he's not the political officer. I forget which officer he is on Red October, but anyway, he's in it too. And he's like the only one that actually tries a Russian accent, because Tim Curry can do whatever he wants. And I take that back. Sam Neill does a very bad Russian accent. The accents are not great in this movie, because Sean Connery just refuses to do a Russian accent. And he just talks like a Scot the whole time, which I'm fine with. Suspension of disbelief. But the movie, basically the plot is following CIA analyst Jack Ryan, who most people, I guess, who are Tom Clancy fans, you know Jack Ryan. He is, how to say this, there is a Russian submarine called the Red October, which is pretty much a silent killer that's meant to get as close to the U.S. border as it can and unleash its arsenal of nuclear missiles. It is a doomsday weapon. And the Captain Ramius, who played by Sean Connery, who is commanding this vessel, is actually planning to defect to the United States with the Red October and give it to the United States government. So the Russians are chasing this submarine down, and the U.S. is coming out to find the submarine because the Russians have told them basically that this guy is gone rogue and he's coming to kill everyone in the U.S. Basically, he's starting World War III or whatever. So the Russian Navy is after Red October. The American Navy is after the Red October, and only one CIA analyst, Jack Ryan, is trying to convince all the higher-ups that this guy is planning to defect. He knows it, and he's kind of figured out what's going on, and he's got to convince everyone and get aboard, and he's got to come up with this plan to safely convince the Russians that the Red October is gone, sunk, and also convince the U.S. government not to sink the Red October. So it's very tense movie, a lot of political intrigue, a lot of Cold War, you know, World War III stuff that was big in 1990, big all through the late 80s and 90s, obviously. It was a scary time. This movie's just so good. And Alec Baldwin is probably my favorite Jack Ryan. No offense to Harrison Ford. He is great in Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger, and I love both those movies. But Hunt for Red October will always be my favorite Tom Clancy property ever. Also, my birthday is in October, so I thought the movie was cool because it was like Red October sounds really cool. Obviously, I became a history major and I know what Red October is now, and referring to the Russian Revolution. There's actually a May Revolution and an October Revolution. I'm not going to do history lessons here. Anyway, But yeah, that movie's great. If you've never seen it, check it out. If you like naval warfare, check it out. It's great for people who like political science, you know, and that whole chess match of politics. It's great for people that like, you know, actually it's got action in it. It's like, it's a kind of a war movie to a degree. It's got a lot of naval warfare stuff in it. And it's just great. It's a smart movie, and it's action packed. And, yeah, I love it. It's an intriguing movie and it totally deserves to be in my favorite 90s movies ever. Coming in number 7 is Jurassic Park. You know, this had to be on here somewhere. Jurassic Park came out in 1993. It stars Sam Neill. Why did I just blank out? Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum. Has Samuel Jackson in it, Wayne Knight. There's a bunch of people in it. I regret having to put Jurassic Park this low, but it has become bland over the years to me. When this movie came out, I wanted to see everything these people were in afterward. I could not get enough of Sam Neill, which was bad for me because the next thing I saw him in, I think, was Event Horizon, and I was way too young to see that movie, and it scarred me. It's dinosaurs. I love dinosaurs. I wanted to be a paleontologist when I was growing up. Ended up being a history major, but I didn't ever went into archaeology or paleontology or anything along those lines. But it's just great. And I know science now has come a long way to kind of correct a lot of the mistakes that are in. We've discovered so much more about dinosaurs now that a lot of mistakes are in Jurassic Park. And there were mistakes at the time even that I could recognize as a kid. Velociraptors aren't 6 feet tall. That's Deinonychus. That's what they should have called them, but that's not as sexy a name as Velociraptor. Things like that, you can forgive because the movie's just so damn great. And the music is great. The acting is great. Everything is just fantastic. The CGI for the time was mind-blowing. Steven Spielberg's directing it. I mean, everything is perfect coming together in this movie. Michael Crichton, who's an amazing writer, wrote the story it's based on. They didn't go into a lot of the backstory of the world and the lore and kind of like the nefarious things behind the scenes with InGen and things like that. They get into it in the later, in the sequels. But this movie is just such a good, fun time. And anytime it's on, I'm going to obviously leave it on and just have it going for ambient noise. And it's so, so much fun. So much fun. Don't know what else to say about this movie. Everyone knows what Jurassic Park is right now. But if you've never seen the very first one, the original, it's still the best one. It's still my favorite. So check it out. Fun fact. There was an Easter egg in Borderlands 3 in the recent DLC where it had the Jurassic Park Explorer that's hanging in the tree. I thought that was kind of fun. If you've seen that and you've played Borderlands 3, you know what I'm talking about. But as soon as I saw it, I actually had to point it out to my wife because she didn't really recognize what it was at first. And I was like, it's Jurassic Park. She's like, oh, yeah. So anyway, fun times. Coming in at number 6 is GoldenEye, W7, which is technically the name of the video game. But GoldenEye, the movie, came out in 1995. It stars Pierce Brosnan, Isabella Skorupka, which I think I'm saying her name right. I haven't looked at it in a long time. It's Isabella Skorupko or Skorupka. I can't remember. I think it's Skorupko. Famke Janssen, of course, looking as good as ever. Sean Bean, of course, I hate to say great villain because he's a great hero. He's a Boromir, and he's also been Ned Stark here recently. So some really good heroes, I guess, with some flaws, but heroes nonetheless. And Scott, Alan Rickman, not Alan Rickman. Oh my gosh, I'm going to hate myself for not remembering his name right now. I'll have to IMDb it while I'm talking, but GoldenEye was the first James Bond movie that I saw really in its entirety. Now, Bond Week was always a thing. I think it came out in like November. It was around Thanksgiving. And I always watched it. My dad kind of pushed. He was always like, oh, you should watch James Bond movies. And I never really got it. I'll be honest. I didn't really get into it. But GoldenEye, I went with my friend and saw it in the theater. And I remember immediately the light bulb just went off. I was like, I want to see everything James Bond now. And I didn't know a lot. So I didn't realize some of them are very dated and corny. Some of them are better than others, obviously, but I got really into James Bond for a while, and I owe this movie, and I really liked all the 90s Brosnan movies. I don't like, was it Die Another Day? Yeah, Die Another Day wasn't great, but I generally like all the Pierce Brosnan movies. I would say that other than GoldenEye, Casino Royale is probably my second favorite Bond movie, but without a doubt, GoldenEye is my favorite James Bond movie. So I'm looking at IMDb now, which I said, Alan Cumming. Couldn't think of his name. Great actor. But he's actually in it as Boris, and he's awesome in it. Such a lovable, hateable character. Anyway, GoldenEye, obviously the plot of GoldenEye is there's a satellite. It's a weapon called the GoldenEye satellite. And it basically knocks out, it's a giant EMP device that knocks out electronics all over, like, any city that it aims at. And James Bond has to stop it. And that's pretty much your thing. I mean, I don't need to get into a lot, but a typical James Bond movie, it's just so well done. And it's from start to finish. It's always intriguing. It's always great. There's something happening that you can't take your eyes off of. The opening dam scene where he jumps literally off of, obviously it's a stuntman, but taking a bungee jump off a dam. It's I think there was some kind of record set at the time for that opening too. But gosh, I was just right out of the gate. I was enthralled with this movie, and seeing it in the theater was such a great experience. And it just opened up a whole nother, like I said, nerd genre for me. I was just like, James Bond movies are now my thing. Yay. And that's really all I can say about it. So we're going to move on. Coming in at number five is Titanic. Titanic came out in 1997. Don't roll your eyes at me. This is not just a chick flick. This movie is incredibly well done. It is directed by James Cameron, music done by James Horner, which is incredible music, great soundtrack. And no, it's not just Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. James Horner's original music for that movie is incredible. Especially if you have like the Irish Scottish flair, and which is a lot of the Third Class Passengers and things like that. It just hits me. It hits the heartstrings, and that's hard to do for me. Obviously, it stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet, Billy Zane. Those are your three main ones. There's a lot of other people in there, but it's obviously the story of a debutante who is coming across to the U.S. on the Titanic, and she meets a third-class passenger who, in a card game, won a ticket. And they fall in love. He's a roaming artist, basically, who's broke. And she falls in love with him over the course of the 2 days the Titanic's afloat, and or whatever it is. But you got to respect James Cameron for going all out on the set and basically recreating these like set pieces that look like the original. I mean, he basically did it 1-to-1 scale on Titanic for some of these rooms and then built an actual, like, a working hydraulic Titanic to do the sinking and everything. It's so much in this huge, like, pool. And it just so much went into this movie. It's an incredible, incredibly shot movie, and I think it's really well done from start to finish. Yes, it's long. It's 3 hours and 17 minutes, I believe. But fun fact. Oh, hi, Zelda. Fun fact about the Titanic is the reason I really like this movie and wanted to see it was because I was actually really into the Titanic before this movie came out. I was a huge enthusiast. I still am. I love like maritime salvage. I always loved seeing documentaries about Robert Ballard finding the Titanic. I did history projects on the Titanic. I had all kinds of books on the, you know, discovery of it and just the history of the Titanic. Still to this day, I'm intrigued by shipwrecks. I love the ocean. And that's why I really love this movie. And the movie didn't turn me off of any of that. And I didn't hate the movie. I actually think it's a very, very well done movie. I can still watch it anytime it's on. It's kind of waned a little for me since I know everything that's going to happen. And that's true of all these movies, really. But something about it, I don't know. I think it's just a good story. It's well done. And people really, I think, pick it apart too much to where they think it's cool to hate it. And you don't have to. I mean, it's a cool movie. You're not a lesser person for liking Titanic. I mean, other than that, I don't know really what else to say about it. It's so good. It's long. I will say a fun tidbit about me seeing it in the theater. I actually saw it in the theater 3 times. Now, hear me out. This was because this is my sister had a huge crush on Leonardo DiCaprio at the time. And I went once to see it, and then I went two more times with her because she wanted to see it again. I think she ended up seeing it like 7 times in the theater. So, if my sister's listening, sorry about that for writing you out. But anyway, that's all I'm going to say about Titanic. It's a great movie. Definitely check it out if you've never seen it before. It's totally worth it. I don't know how at this point you haven't seen it, but sit down, buckle up for 3 hours and watch Titanic. It's a good movie. Coming in at number 4 is Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump came out in 1994. It stars Tom Hanks, Robin Wright, and Gary Sinise. And this movie means a lot to me. I literally, you know, when they ask what's a movie you can quote from start to finish, Forrest Gump is my movie that I answer immediately. I know this movie so well. I've gone to the Bubba Gump restaurants, and when they ask you trivia questions, I've never been stumped, ever. I get them all. And usually impresses the people there because they get some hard questions for me, and I always get them right. I just know so much about the movie. There was a game show called Win Ben Stein's Money, and if you remember that from the 90s, and the final question was always, you got to pick the category, and then they would ask you like a stupid, like deep question that like no one could possibly get. And I always knew if I did Forrest Gump, I would be able to get it. The movie is based on a book, and the movie does depart from the book a good bit and make it a lot more, I don't know what you want to say, viewer friendly. It probably has some things that are problematic for 2020, and it does have some issues in it that are kind of heavy. It definitely involves physical and sexual abuse. It involves taking advantage of people that might be of like mentally handicapped, things like that. There's a lot, and I hope I said that right. I don't mean that with any kind of ill will, but that's the best way I can describe it right now. But Forrest Gump, it follows the life of a guy named Forrest Gump, and it's basically from his childhood up until, it goes from the 1950s up to the right up to 1994. It basically goes up to when the movie is supposed to be set. One reason I love this movie is because it is my dad's generation. My dad was born in 1946, and a lot of the things that you see Forrest Gump going through, he's moving through history and all that. He's kind of Mr. Magooing his way through all these like huge historical events, and he doesn't necessarily see how important they are. He's just kind of like, oh, I was a big part of all these huge events, and he just kind of bumbles through them. And it's kind of an endearing story in that sense. But it's fun to see all these big historical moments. And that's what my dad lived through, and I think that's a big thing. Also, the music is incredible because the soundtrack goes through all that era of music. You've got just all the, like, from 50s, you got, Rebel Rouser, I think that's Duane Eddy, and all the way up, you get into, like, good 60s music, you get 70s, like, CCR, Lynyrd Skynyrd, you get Buffalo Springfield, you get all these great, great tunes, and then up into the 80s, and it's just such an incredible story to see someone live, generate like this generational slice of life thing, but he's going through all these huge historical moments, and it's just, the music mixed with the story, mixed with this one guy trying to find his place in the world, and it always reflects back to the love of his life, Jenny, who was his childhood crush, who becomes his wife eventually, and her vastly varying experience through all these decades. She definitely goes a different life route than he does, and it's just incredible. It's such a good movie. It's well written. Robert Zemeckis directed it. He also directed, obviously, Back to the Future. So this is the second time you'll see him in my countdown list things that I'm doing here. But yeah, the original score is actually really good too. I actually like the piano theme of Forrest Gump. I remember there was a guy I went to high school with, graduated with, and everything, and he was able to play that on piano like perfectly, and it was always kind of impressive to me because even though I played piano, that was like a song that he could just nail, and I was always impressed by it. But basically, I don't know. Like I said, this movie hits, it hits hard for me just because I know it so well. I watched it so much. A lot of my like early 90s and into the mid 90s movies I would put on because you didn't have the same luxuries of like wasting time on the internet or on your phone and things like that. And a lot of times you would just put on a movie over and over and over and over again while you were doing other stuff. And Forrest Gump is one of those movies to me that was just a comfort movie. I always had it on while I was doing things. And to this day, if it's on TV, it's a comfort movie. I can just put it on while I'm working on projects and things. And always feel good about it. And, that's, and it seems to be a common theme. And it's one of my criteria for picking these movies is something that's comfort. Kind of, I think of like having it on while I'm doing other stuff, you know, it, whether it was, you know, in the early 90s playing with toys on the floor or, you know, getting into the later 90s when I was working out. Like sometimes I would watch movies while I was on, you know, on the bike or on the treadmill and things like that. And it's just crazy to think now you can take your phone around and watch all the newest shows and watch Netflix and things like that. And I didn't have that back then. In the 90s, you know, I had a VHS player. You put that in, you put something on, and then you went about your business and did whatever you wanted to do. And that was life. And that's why I know some of these movies so well. And this one's just the best example of that. Now, I only put it at four because I think there's three other movies that are I just like better. But if you had asked me at any given time, they're like, I say at any given time, if you had asked me in the early 2000s, what's your favorite movie of all time, I probably would have said Forrest Gump, honestly. It's I just knew it so well. It seems like it's a movie I've seen more than any other movie, bar possibly number one on this list. So I won't give anything away there, but I mean, I just can't really talk about how much I love this movie. Problematic as it may be today for some people, I think it's just really well done, and it does depart from the books as well. And I think the writer actually wrote the second book crazier as an antithesis to the popularity of the movie, but you know, I'm not going to talk about any of that. Tom Hanks knocks it out of the park. He actually modeled his accent based on the accent of the kid that plays little, like child Forrest. Little Forrest is someone different. That's his son who appears in the movie, who is actually played by Haley Joel Osment, who I think that's his first movie, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, I don't really know what else to say that people wouldn't already know about Forrest Gump. It's a such a solid movie. So I guess at that point, I'm going to move on, having said that. Coming in at number three is The Sandlot. The Sandlot came out in 1993. It stars, what's his name? Tom Geary, I think is how he pronounces it. I think that's his name. I know Geary's his last name, but I think Tom's his first name. Anyway, he's had a lot of trouble recently. Gosh, I don't remember a lot of these actors' names, and I apologize. But I know Marley Shelton's in it, because Marley Shelton is super hot and has always been a crush of mine through the late 90s and early 2000s. I have no clue how old she was in 1993, so I'm not going to be creepy and say, like, oh, she's so hot in it, because she might have been, like, 16 or 17 in this movie. I don't know. I think she was born in 1974, so she might have already been 18. But she's the love interest of Squints, and that's one of the many side stories. But The Sandlot is just such a quintessential 90s movie. It's about young boys growing up in, I believe it's the 50s, late 50s or like early 60s. I think it's the late 50s because they talk about one character getting really into the 60s and disappearing. But it's about these kids who, it's a new kid moving to town. And, oh, by the way, Karen Allen and Dennis Leary play the mom and stepdad or mom's boyfriend, which are great. And then obviously James Earl Jones is in this as well. But he moves to town. He doesn't have any friends. And he befriends this local baseball team. It's these guys who just get together and they've kind of formed their own sandlot baseball team. And they play in this raggedy old sandlot, you know, field. And it's really just about, not just about baseball, but it is a baseball movie. It's a growing up movie. It's a summer movie. It just appeals to so much as a kid who is growing up as a boy, loving baseball. And it's about hijinks, because it eventually devolves into the kid takes a baseball that's signed by Babe Ruth and uses it in their game. And when it gets hit as a home run into the field, that this big dog that they're all afraid of, which is another thing you can associate or identify with as a kid, they have to go get it. And they start coming up with all these wacky ideas of how to get into the yard and get the ball back. And it's just a great feel-good movie. I mean, there's really nothing bad to say about it. It is the best feel-good summer movie that I think I've ever seen. I could watch this over and over and over again. It's great, and it's bittersweet because at the ending, you get to see like where all the guy, or you get to hear narrated where all the guys end up. Like, oh well, this, you know, these guys went here, this guy disappeared. Never thought, you know, who they keep in touch with, who they don't, and that's a real, you know, real fact of life that a lot of people don't want to admit, especially when they're kids. The people you know, or friends with in high school, friends with in college, those aren't going to be your friends forever. You're going to grow apart. You're going to grow up. You're going to move away. Things are going to happen. People just grow apart. And it's a very bittersweet ending to see that narrated like that. But just one of the best, not only baseball movies, but summer movies, growing up movies, slice of life movies. I mean, just watch The Sandlot. It's so good. Music's fun in it. There is nothing wrong with that movie. That movie to me is perfect. So it definitely deserves to be number three on here. And it's only number three because there's two more movies that I really like better. Coming in at number two is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil came out in 1998. It is directed by Clint Eastwood. This is probably one of the deep cuts that people probably didn't see coming on this list. So Clint Eastwood had directed movies before. He did Unforgiven, I believe, was his first one, and that was like 92. And it's a great Western, a great movie. But seeing Clint Eastwood direct a movie that was based on a book by John Berendt and based on a true story, it became an MO for future things that Clint Eastwood would do, a lot of his interest. So like I said, it's based on a book by John Berendt, and it's artistically based on a true story. So they have to cut the timeline a lot, obviously, to make it fit. I won't go into the true story that much, but the plot of Midnight is there's an author named John Kelso, who is John Berendt's character, essentially. Played by John Cusack. Too many Johns there, I know. Sorry to confuse you. But John Cusack, he comes to do a report for Southern Living, the magazine Southern Living. I grew up in the South. If you don't know what Southern Living is, sorry. It's basically a magazine that's all about gardens and parties and recipes and just all kinds of, you know, getaway. Like, just think of all those great freaking, like, spreads of, like, food and gardens and cookout kind of setting in beautiful cities on the coast or, you know, just in these amazing settings. And that's what Southern Living is. So he is down there to record, to report on a Christmas party by a man by the name of Jim Williams, who's played by Kevin Spacey. And this is a true story, by the way. Jim Williams is accused of murder during the party. So that puts a kibosh on the whole magazine article. And John Kelso says, well, I want to write a book on it. And so he goes around town interviewing all these people, trying to figure out if Jim Williams, who he has met and is kind of fond of, was really killing in cold blood or whether it was self-defense. And it follows the court, the case, basically. So it's a courtroom drama mixed with comedy, mixed with a love story. And I think the love story is what really kind of makes it more of a novel and not just a true story. It's not completely nonfiction. It is fiction based on nonfiction. Allison Eastwood, by the way, one of Clint Eastwood's daughters, plays the love interest in the movie. He has other daughters and a son, obviously, who are actors and actresses. But this was the one movie I think this is the only movie I've ever seen Allison Eastwood in. But she's good in it. Her southern accent's a little too genteel. I've lived in the low country on the coast. By the way, this entire movie takes place in Savannah, Georgia. And that's another reason it's very close to me, because I have lived in Charleston, South Carolina, which is a sister city to Savannah. I've been to Savannah many, many times. They're only an hour and a half away from each other, really. And that's just because of the way the roads, highways are. But they're very close as far as mileage. They're very similar cities. That's why they're called sister cities. And if you grew up in the South, especially in the low country, there's a lot in this movie that will touch home. There's a lot of voodoo element to it. There's a lot of the whole genteel Southern manners when people are talking about you behind your back. It's just something that hits home. Like it feels so good to see something take place in this beautiful low country city, and you see the dark, seedy underside of it. And then you throw, like I said, the voodoo in it and everything, and the Gullah influence. And it's just something that I've personally lived and seen and witnessed. And so it means a lot more to me than it may to some who have never grown up around here. Or I say around here, I'm not there currently. I don't live there anymore, but aren't familiar with that area. But it's a really good movie. Nonetheless, it's, I don't want to say progressive for its time, but it does deal with a lot of, it takes place in the 1980s, and it deals with homosexuality and how that was approached in the 80s, and how, especially in the South, where it's kind of taboo and accepted at the same time. It's a very odd, odd mix of that. Like when you have the elites, the debutantes, the higher-ups, these genteel Southern old money and new money coming together, and then you see their dark secrets kind of unveiled, and how a society or how a community reacts to that. And then, like I said, it's a courtroom drama also, and it involves paranormal and voodoo and things like that. It's just an interesting movie. I don't know how to do it justice by explaining it. It's just something you have to watch. And it's another one of those movies, like I described Empire Strikes Back, where it seems like it's just going for 3 hours. It seems like you're digesting so much, but you're really not. And it's probably a two-hour movie. It may be a little over. Similar with Interview with a Vampire, too. It's not a three-hour movie, but it feels like you're digesting so much. When it's over, you're going to be like, wow, I just took in a whole lot of information. Like, constantly. And I feel like I've been sitting here for 3+ hours and you really haven't. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. A movie can exhaust you kind of thing, but it's a very smart dialogue, very well written. And it's just an interesting movie. And it's hands down to this day, it's number two on this list for a reason. It would have been number one if there wasn't one movie that I think sums up my 90s experience better, but this to this day is probably, honestly, this movie and the movie I pick as number one, I could probably put as my number one and two favorite movies of all time from any decade. That's how much I support this movie. So if you've never heard of it, never watched it, check it out. Let me know what you think about it. Moving on. Finally, coming in at number one on my top 10 favorite 90s movies is Tombstone. Tombstone came out in 1993. It stars Kurt Russell, Sam Elliott, Bill Paxton, Stephen Lang, Thomas Hayden Church, Jason Priestley. God, who else is in this movie? There are so many freaking people. Charlton freaking Heston is in this movie. God, there's so many people in this movie. I've probably already missed some others. Powers Booth, Michael Biehn. Like, that's my dude crush. Michael Biehn, God, he's plays Johnny Ringo and does it amazingly. Val Kilmer plays Doc Holliday. I just rattled off the best cast ever. Billy Bob Thornton is in this movie, and he is so unimportant compared to all those people I just, like, listed. Like, he is literally he's a nobody character compared to everyone I just listed. That's what's so funny about this movie. It's got a huge cast. And so good, so good. Tombstone follows I won't say the complete life of Wyatt Earp, but the life of Wyatt Earp as he arrives in Tombstone and then his revenge ride to avenge the death of his brother. If you want a true documentary on the life of Wyatt Earp, there was a movie that came out the same year called Wyatt Earp, starring Kevin Costner and Dennis Quaid. It is a very long slog of a documentary movie, a biopic of Wyatt Earp, and it's not nearly as entertaining as Tombstone. Tombstone is a action western, start to finish. It is full throttle. It is amazing. Some of the best acting, some of the best actors at their time. Like, some of them kind of starting to get out of their peak, and some of them just starting in their peak. You got people like Powers Booth, who is a stage actor playing Curly Bill Brocious, and he is just chews the screen up every second he's on it, because he was a very renowned theater actor, and so he's like very over the top, very animated with his like hand movements and stuff. Oh man, every time he's on screen, it's great. Val Kilmer and Michael Biehn as Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo, their back and forth is just incredible. That tension leading up to their gunfight. Tombstone is just hands down the best Western. And I love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I was never a John Wayne fan. I was a Clint Eastwood fan. I love The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I love The Outlaw, Jesse Wells. There's some really good Westerns that I like. There's even been some decent Westerns recently that weren't remakes, like Open Range and things like that. But, I mean, Tombstone, for me, is the peak. It is, to me, that's the last Western. After that, I'm just like, wow, okay, that's the best Western ever made. The movie has great music. It's just got great acting. It's paced well. And it really condenses history. Yes, it is. It is not historically accurate, start to finish. As a historian, that bothers me. But as someone who is a military history major or a history major in general, who wants to convey a story to someone to get them excited about it, this is the best way to do it. Someone sees Tombstone and they get all into the Old West and they get into history, then good. It's bringing someone into the fold, someone who wants to learn more, someone who wants to do research, and I can get down with that. And that's why another reason I love Tombstone. There's a suspicious lack of Mexican and African American cowboys, which I won't say a majority, but a lot of it is a very whitewashed movie. A lot of cowboys were actually African American and or however you want to say it. I won't say straight African American, but like they were either black or Mexican. But the movie itself, like I said, is getting the point across of this one man's life and a microcosm of it, of this whole ride for vengeance, which has become kind of a legendary thing. And it's all centered around the most legendary shootout of the Old West, which was the shootout at Tombstone, the OK Corral. Like I said, it's just, it opens so many doors for people to get more into not only Westerns, but maybe just learning history in general. And you don't even have to be a fan of history. It is a great action movie. Just start to finish, it is amazing. This movie is also my wife's favorite movie of all time, and which I think is incredible. That, you know somebody or end up marrying someone who you can basically agree on, been like, you know, oh yeah, that's the freaking best movie ever made. Like, to her, this is the greatest movie. It's her favorite movie. To me, I don't think it's my favorite movie ever made. It's definitely, definitely top five favorite movies of all time. I just don't know what else to say about this movie. It is incredible. Please watch it if you've never watched it. You can even know how it ends because, I mean, it's history. It's based on a true story, so you can kind of see what's going on. Like I said, they took artistic liberties. They shortened down the timeline similar to Midnight. But, I mean, do yourself a favor. If you've never seen Tombstone, you are missing out not only on the greatest Western of all time, but one of the greatest movies of all time, one of the greatest action movies of all time, and probably one of the greatest 90s movies of all time. And that's why it's number one on my list. Now, I'm going to go through a couple of Honorable mentions, and I'm not going to take long on this. I just want to speed through them and say, hey, here's a reason I didn't do it. Gettysburg, I love so much, but Gettysburg has an amazing cast, is a great movie, but it's 4 hours and like 19 minutes long, and it is a very strange movie to explain to people because it is it comes off as a historical movie. It comes off as a literal telling of the Battle of Gettysburg, but it is actually based on a book by Jeff Shara that was written in 1974 as anti-war propaganda. And it's really meant to take a historical event and show the futility of war and kind of the pointlessness of it and how we are still kind of fighting the same. And this is funny because the book was written in 1974 and the movie came out in 1993, and yet we're in 2020 and we're fighting the exact same issues. It's sectionalism, it's, you know, political divide, it's racism, it's kind of handling all those situations. And I think the movie doesn't do as good a job as the book of translating that over. And I don't think it does it, like I said, a good job of helping the situation. But it is still an amazing movie. And if you're a fan of the Civil War or you're a military historian, it's a military history movie that you have to watch. But keep in mind, it is art. It is fiction. It is fictionalized dialogue to a degree based on real historical accounts and research. So keep that in mind when you watch it. It is not a word for word, this is exactly how the Battle of Gettysburg went. The Phantom Menace. I really almost put The Phantom Menace on here, and I might have got a lot of hate for that, but The Phantom Menace actually, I still like the prequel trilogy. I like the entire Skywalker saga. I love Star Wars, and I will always digest anything Star Wars, and I appreciate everything that I get Star Wars, even if it's not, like, perfect. So yeah, I love The Phantom Menace. Ray Park is awesome as Darth Maul. The lightsaber fights were incredible at the time. They blew my mind. Without the huge pod racing midsection, I think I would love that movie more. But it is what it is. The Sixth Sense, same thing. Great movie. Once you've seen it, though, twist is over. I really like that movie because I'm obsessed with the paranormal, and I love ghost stories and legends. And it's set in such a homey style where you see these like old Philadelphia homes and things. I don't know. I just really like it. But it's not good enough to be like, I'm going to rewatch this every time it's on. T2, Terminator 2. I've talked about it in the 80s movies. It's a 90s movie, obviously. But same thing, same reason that I didn't put the Terminator in my 80s movies. It's a great action movie. I just, when it first came out, I didn't like that movie until later. I had to be older before I really appreciated that movie. Silence of the Lambs. Same thing. I really like that movie. I love true crime. I love serial killers. I love all that stuff, but I just don't really, I think it's a great movie. I just don't want to rewatch it that often. Groundhog Day, one of my favorite comedies of the 90s. Same thing. I've seen it way too many times, and it doesn't have the same endearing qualities as some of these other movies do. Disney animated movies I purposely left out. I think I'm going to have to do a top 10 countdown on my favorite Disney animated movies. The Renaissance era is my favorite Disney era. I didn't know really what, if I could choose something, whether it would displace any of these other movies. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, same thing. I didn't appreciate it until much later in life when I myself was more of a traveler and more of a writer and, you know, working in music and things like that, being a rock star, all that kind of stuff, traveling musician. That's when I started to appreciate Fear and Loathing more than I did when I was actually growing up. I didn't really get it when I was younger. American Pie, I was too young to get the whole dirty humor. Same thing with There's Something About Mary. I can group these together. I love There's Something About Mary. It was the first real raunchy comedy I ever saw in theaters, and it kind of opened me up to that. But American Pie, I didn't really like. I didn't really want to see that series. I was kind of sheltered, honestly, growing up, and I didn't get down with that stuff until, like, I didn't really get it, that kind of humor, until later in the 2000s, when the second one came out is when I really was like, oh man, I missed out. The Matrix, super dated. It's just super dated. That's all I'm gonna say about it. Fight Club. I love Fight Club. I think it's a great movie. I still will watch it whenever it's on. I just don't love it as much as these 10. That's the best way to describe it. Last Action Hero, my favorite parody. I didn't say parody. It's an action movie that kind of pokes fun at all action movies, and I love that. And it's got, it's so well done. And it's my super honorable mention. This will be number 11 on this list. Go watch Last Action Hero because it's a great movie. TMNT, the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Love it. It's so dark. It's based on the comics, not the cartoon. And that's maybe the disparity there is I grew up on the cartoon. And then when I saw the movie, I didn't know about the comics. And so it's kind of weird to me. But I really love that movie and appreciate it for what it is. And I think it's actually a really, really well done movie. I think that's about wraps it up. Is there anything on here I have? Yes. The other movie that would be number 11 or 12, if I put Last Action Hero on here, would be Robin Hood Men in Tights. Probably my favorite comedy from the 90s. I think it's my favorite Mel Brooks movie, and I was too young to really get Spaceballs. Robin Hood Men in Tights, though, hit at the right time where I really laughed at it, and to this day, I still think it's a great comedy. Finally, I want to say a dark comedy, Ravenous, came out in 1999. This and Cable Guy were the two really dark humor comedies that came out that I really liked from the 90s. Ravenous has got great actors in it, really unique storyline. It is a spoiler. It's basically a story of Wendigos and cannibals, and it is great. And if you don't go into it thinking it's a horror movie and appreciating it for a dark comedy, you're going to love that movie. So I'm going to wrap it up there. Thanks for listening. You can always reach out to our social media. You can find us Hello Tangent Pod. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on, obviously you can email us directly at HelloTangentPod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram. You can find my personal Twitter at RevSnakeBite. You can find Kat at Dual Omniblades. We always answer any questions. Check out Kat's artwork. She does commissions. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope you look forward to part 3 when I'll be doing my top 10 favorite 2000s movies. And that may be harder than the 90s even. We'll find out. It took a while, actually. I went through about three or four lists before I came down to the one that I recording now. So it's going to be tough for me to do the 2000s because that's when I really was watching a lot of movies and getting very more critical about what I liked. So I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and please tune in again. Thanks. Bye. Realize that the world is more